Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Stu does America.
Subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Get your Stu Does America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10 for 10% off your order. Jason Buttrell is here with just an amazing theory on the Atlantic Signal leaks. Andrew Cuomo is gaining ground in the New York City mayoral race. God help us all. But we start by doing America's COVID hangover. Here we are, 5 years after COVID. And, you know, this is March 2025. You remember March 2020. Our show started in February 2020. And, you know, the COVID thing was pretty big. And I feel like a lot of us kind of want to never look at it again, which is understandable. But I feel like it's interesting to look at how the world has changed since back then. And, you know, I think we often lose sight as to what the world is, what we lost for a period of time, what we, lost for just a moment in time, and what we maybe lost forever because of the COVID-19 virus, and also, of course, maybe more importantly, how the government handled it. I want to focus on a really, really interesting piece by the New York Times called 30 COVID Change Charts. Here we go, 30 charts that show how COVID changed everything in March 2020, 5 years ago. And they have 30 of these. Obviously, we're not going to go through all 30 of them. But they're pretty interesting, and just to see how the world in America in particular changed because of the illness itself and then the response to it. And I broke it into three basic categories here. First of all, you have the one-time crazy spikes in something. Something completely changes in March 2020 on the day. It gets absolutely insane and then comes back to normal relatively quickly. But to the point where it was such an incredible spike, it breaks the chart completely. Right. Like you'll remember some of these, like, for example, unemployment claims. Here's unemployment claims. And by the way, this is a Chartapalooza episode of this program. Of course, podcasters, I will keep you up to date with how all these things look. But you can look at it on YouTube if you want to see all the visuals. Unemployment claims went from pretty even from all, 2015, a little bit down. You can't even see the movement, though. When we talk about, it went from 5 to 4%. You can't even see that on this chart because it went all the way up to 6 million claims per week for a couple of weeks and then came all the way down and was back down to normal by about 2022. And when you look at that chart, you say, oh gosh, it came back really quickly. Remember that 2020 to 2022 period was a dark economic time, right? It was really, really terrible. And it lasted a long, long time until it quote unquote came back to normal. But the chart can't even detect those changes anymore because COVID broke the chart. Also broke the chart when you're talking about searching for cutting your own hair. We did that for a very short time. It was a dark period on this program where I could not cut my hair. I decided I was not going to do it until things actually opened. And my hair got shaggy and annoying, and I hated it. I actually bought a Flowbee to try to cut my hair at one point. Didn't wind up using it because I was scared of it. Anyway, here is the chart for how to cut your own hair. You see, again, nobody's searching for it. Then everybody's searching for it for about a month, and then no one ever searches for it again. So you have those kind of one-time spikes that break the chart completely. The next category is you have these big spikes in March 2020, these COVID spikes, and then things sort of slowly return to normal. We definitely lost something for a period of time, but then things kind of went back to the way that they were. Let me give you some examples on that. For example, distance traveled. How much were you traveling? The big difference there is, I would focus on the bottom chart there, which is by plane, which is you see people traveling basically the exact same amount of distance by plane. Then that goes to basically zero in March 2020. And by about mid-2021, we are back to normal plane travel. Give or take. Kind of the same thing happens with cars. People really didn't travel all that much in cars. And I felt like I traveled more in cars, honestly, during that period, because what could you do in the weekends with your kids? You just took them on long drives to parks. Nothing was open. But we got back to basically normal and car travel as well. Murder and theft is another interesting one. Murder, we remember the spike in crime through COVID and through that next summer, the George Floyd summer, and on into the beginning of Biden's term. And that is what we saw. We saw a big increase starting in March 2020 of murder rates went up by, probably 30-something percent, and then peaked in about 2022 and then started coming back down. We're now at about normal rates. Theft, of course, kind of did the opposite. In March 2020, it dropped because, I mean, no one was leaving their house. So it was, who are you stealing from? You can't go to people's houses and rob them there. You can't rob them on their street. It got very, very difficult for criminals. It then rose way back up in that sort of George Floyd summer and on into the Biden administration, peaked in about end of 2022, beginning of 2023, and then has come back down actually to rates that are a little bit lower. This is a fascinating one for, I mean, a lot of you who watch this care about this stuff because I don't know, why else would you watch the show if it wasn't for environmental charts? I feel like if you're, we are number one in America with people who want to obsess about dumb environmental charts. That's what we do here. But this one is fascinating. This is global carbon dioxide emissions. And this is such a, this chart, I could do a whole monologue just on this chart. And it doesn't look all that exciting when you look at the line. But for podcasters, you see an increase in how much emissions we are putting out between 2015 and 2019, which is fascinating because I thought we were, wait a minute, I thought we were having all sorts of cuts in emissions from all these wonderful increases in solar power. Nope, not really. But it drops massively in 2020 and then increases back to normal levels in 2021 and is now much higher than it was back in 2019. The 2020 drop was the largest annual decrease in carbon dioxide emissions since 1750, okay, according to the experts who claim to have the information about what our global climate looked like in 1750. I'm a little skeptical of how exact those numbers are, but beyond that, what's interesting about this chart is, number one, you have this massive cut, a cut you could never achieve with any sort of legislation or environmental plan. And all of the gains go away in, or all the decreases in carbon dioxide emissions go away in 1 year. And we're back to normal and we're still increasing. And that's, of course, because this was sort of a temporary change in human behavior. But it shows that we didn't cut it by all that much. That decrease to set from 1750 is not that big of a decrease. It's basically cutting it only back to 2016 numbers. So you turn the whole world off for a year and we only go back a few years in carbon dioxide emissions shows that, look, your feeble policy is going to do nothing to solve this problem, no matter how many times they say it's going to. All right, next up, public transit. This one's interesting because you go from hundreds of millions of transit trips, basically down, 75%. We're down to under 200 million in March 2020. That number slowly increases and has now slowly come back to about where the trend was. It's still a little bit below where it was in 2019, a couple hundred million fewer trips than way before the pandemic. But you see the trend here, the trend line, it was decreasing before the pandemic, and we're about where we are. Not quite back to normal, if you will, but certainly very close to it. After-tax income is a fascinating one. If you love to complain about government spending, as I often do, you see, of course, the rising incomes through the Trump administration the first time, and then you get that big peak with this first stimulus check. That goes away, comes back to normal. Then you get a second stimulus check. That goes away, comes back to normal. Then you get a third, the American Rescue Plan. This is Biden's big thing, and that's where it peaks. And now we've come all the way back down and got back to normal. What's fascinating about that is, once again, these stimulus, you throw a bunch of money at people like this. What do? I mean, maybe they spend some of it. Maybe it gives you a little bit of it gives you a little bit of an economic panacea for a very short period of time. But that is it. It goes away. And now we're back to normal income levels. What's fascinating is what that level, what all that money, all that government spending, trillions of dollars, by the way, most of that money did not go to health. About 90% of it went to things other than health care. Put it in people's pockets. A lot of people bought all sorts of crap. Okay, you remember this period. People spent their stimmy checks. They got their stimmy checks. Then it went away. What did we get for that trillions of dollars in spending? What we got is what people refer to as the Great Resignation. And it's shown in this chart, resignations. This is, again, another New York Times chart. You see the resignations generally rising until you hit March 2020. And then resignations drop off this chart. Why? People are terrified. They're not going to drop their jobs while the economy has shut down. A lot of them are getting fired, but they didn't want to quit at that point. Then they got a bunch of money from the government. And then, you know, people started getting, you know, the everything opened up and jobs started opening up and people got cocky. They had a bunch of money in the bank. And so they started resigning the jobs that they didn't like. That peaked in about 2022 and has now fallen back to normal levels of resignation. So the Great Resignation at one point was talked about as like, here's this new trend. Everyone's going to be resigning their jobs all the time. Didn't hold at all. That is now pretty much gone. So that was seemingly a one-time thing, thanks to Uncle Sam. Next up, this is a sad one for all of our four-legged friends out there. Adopting a dog. Yes, adopting a dog, searches for that peaked incredibly in 2020, went all the way up. Everyone wanted to have a dog at their house. And then it kind of came down by 2022, had dropped back down to normal levels, actually slightly below normal levels, because a lot of those people had dogs already. Remember, that moved all the dog adoptions up a couple of years. And then people started ditching their dogs after that, which is even more sad. But that is kind of where you were. And that gives you a good sense of where people were in 2020. They wanted the lovable dog. They're at home. They adopt the dog. And now they're no longer adopting the dogs at the same rate. That's a sad one for our four-legged friends. A positive one for our two-legged friends might be, hey, we all turned into alcoholics for a few months, but that didn't really hold. Interestingly, in 2020, everybody started buying alcohol because they wanted to kill themselves, and this was the slowest way to do it. And everyone started pounding alcohol all the way through March 2020 till about 2021, 2022, where that peaked. That has now retreated to the pre-pandemic trend, which, by the way, was increasing. So you have a major increase from 2016 to 2020. That increase basically continues all the way till today. But we had that huge spike in between. So we're back now on normal trend lines of all of us just being kind of alcoholics, which is a much, much healthier option, I'm heard. And it's interesting because I've heard so much about this sort of sober movement, which, by the way, I think is a good thing. I never was a believer in a couple glasses of wine are good for your health. That doesn't mean that I don't enjoy my occasional alcoholic drinks. But I will say, I never was fooled into thinking it was good for you. The new guidance is kind of like, it's not really good for you, but you can still have some. It's not going to kill you. But I've heard so many people about like, oh, now people aren't drinking. They're drinking these virgin cocktails at bars. No sign in the data of that whatsoever. I mean, unless we're canceling that out with other alcoholic purchases, I don't know. Doesn't seem to be much sign of that. There's a supposed increase in those types of people, but I don't really see it. And then we have a final category of these charts. How did COVID change the world? Well, remember this term that was thrown out around a lot during COVID? This is the new normal. And I hated that term. And I was worried that this could be the new normal, right? Like, how is this going to reverse? How are things going to change? You know, I don't know. In Texas, our new normal came really, really fast, which was basically the old normal. But some things changed around the country and never got back to normal. And this is the stuff we really lost because of not only COVID, but the government response to COVID. Let me start with used car prices. Used car prices were pretty reasonable from 2016 all the way to 2020. They dropped initially because everyone was like, I don't want to spend any money. And then they spiked like crazy all the way up to February 2022, where we had the peak of the used car price market. That has dropped a little bit, but it is still way, way above normal pre-COVID. And it seems like we may have at least a long-term used car market increase. That's a problem, obviously, for people looking for reasonably priced cars. And with the kind of new idea with tariffs, which started, by the way, under Biden, 100% tariffs on cars. I don't know if it's electric vehicles or all cars from China. And then has increased, obviously, with Trump, who's much more favorable to tariffs than previous Republican presidents, at least. That is a fascinating thing that might not be changing for a long period of time. So used car prices might be high for the foreseeable future. Next up, and this is probably one of the more sad examples of what we lost during COVID, third through eighth graders and their U.S. scores. This is just a way of measuring academic performance. It's not necessarily just about whether they get lower scores or not, but you see a massive drop of about between a quarter and a half a year behind in reading and math on average. Now, some of that plays out in majorly separating ways. And that, you know, a lot has to do with that. I mean, I'm just gonna be frank with you, blue states and red states. Red states opened early, got their kids back to school. Their decreases are much less punishing to the kids when it comes to academic performance than it is in blue states. Blue states see, you know, and look, and like, you know, you could say all those stupid Democrats and their dumb policies. Of course, true. But a lot of Republicans in those states, and, you know, kids shouldn't really be members of parties yet. They're the ones paying for the policies made by the left. And it is incredibly sad to see that sort of drop that, by the way, just has not recovered. We saw a massive drop and really only slight recovery from that. Next up, vaccinations. This is interesting because the Great Barrington Declaration, which was, I covered this a couple weeks ago, the kind of the skeptical response to the government lockdowns. You know, people like Jay Bhattacharya were people who were major co-signers of this. I think Marty Makary was on that list. And they came out and said, hey, we can't be just shutting down a society. We can't be locking down. This is going to do all sorts of damage to people. What we should do is focus on protecting the most vulnerable for COVID and let, you know, people who, you know, let the 25-year-olds in the workforce go out and do their thing. That was very controversial at the time, kind of embraced by conservatives. The number one thing they worried about, the first thing that they said could happen if we did not adopt their approach, was that we would have lower vaccination rates for kids for normal things. Nothing to do with the COVID vaccine, just, you know, normal things that kids get vaccinated for. We've seen that happen. That started in 2020 and has dropped now down well below the line and is now going the, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's flattened out yet. It's still dropping these rates. Now, a lot of this has to do with not the shutdowns per se, but the way the government tried to mandate the COVID vaccine. When they did that, parents, people said, wait a minute, I don't want that thing. You're trying to force it down my throat. Maybe I'm going to start questioning all the other vaccinations that we used to typically provide our kids. Those rates are dropping, and we've seen some consequences of that so far. So we'll see. We'll monitor that one as well. Then we get into some other, I think, really sad stuff. Time socializing with others. This was decreasing anyway before we got to the COVID period. And then we saw a massive drop off in 2020 by about 25% of the time that you're normally socializing with others. That drops by 25% in 2020 and has stayed low. It's increased a slight amount, but we have now lost a massive percentage of the time that we actually spend with other human beings. That's bad. Spending all your time online and not spending time with actual people is really, really bad. And you also start to see those people when they're just online personas, as sort of like different, right? They're awful. You can't accept. People are awful online, right? So you only see the worst of people online instead of actually spending time with people that you might even disagree with, and learning that hey, maybe they might be annoying on politics, but actually they're kind of decent people. This is why every Democrat thinks every Republican is some crazy insurrectionist Nazi. I mean, because, you know, they're insane. They're online all the time. Yeah, spend some time with real people. I don't know. I feel like when Democrats spend time with conservatives, what they find out is, oh, they're actually kind of normal, great people. And that happens the other way as well. So that's one, time socializing with others. And the other side of that coin is how much time you're spending at home. Look at this, man. I mean, you know, we had a massive increase, of course, in 2020, as everyone would expect, a 100% increase of the amount of time you spend at home. But you'd think that would be dropping off and getting back to normal levels. It's not. We've seen a little bit of a decrease again from 2020. People are getting out of the house a little bit more, which is good. However, it's nowhere close to where it was before that. This whole touch grass thing that everybody talks about, hey, get out of your house, touch some grass, see some people, do some things, that is a real problem. And it's going to get much, much worse with AI and virtual reality and all those other things. So that is those are fundamental core problems that we're developing in our new technological society that got kicked into high gear because of COVID and have not recovered. And finally, you knew this one was coming. The federal debt. Our debt was bad before. There's no doubt about it. It was on a line that was increasing very significantly. We had all sorts of massive problems. And then we decided to just buy the entire country out of working for about a year and a half. That sort of decision increases federal debt to a situation That is absolutely intolerable. $3 trillion increase in just the months after March, as the New York Times notes. But what they don't note is now it's up to $10 trillion. That's $10 trillion above the already crazy levels we expected from the pre-pandemic trend. It was already horrible. We were doing show after show after show about it then, and now we're $10 trillion past that pace. This is getting worse and worse and worse. We dealt with the ramifications with that, with inflation. We're never getting that those prices back either. I got news for you. Really, really negative things. Really, really a giant wave is coming when it comes to the debt. And that wave got much, much taller through the COVID years. So that's what we're looking at. That was what the last 5 years have brought us. Some things that were bad for a time and went away. And some things that are here, unfortunately, to stay. And most of those things, really, really negative. Speaking of really, really negative experiences, Jason Buttrell joins us next. I hope you enjoyed that trip down memory lane into 2020. Now, I know we all want to forget those times. But let's be honest, they were there, the empty store shelves, the doctors not being available, the panic over every cough, God forbid, you cough in a crowded area. It was kind of chaotic there for a while. And if there's one thing that we should have learned, it's this. No one is coming to save you. You have to be ready when things go wrong. And that's why I keep a Jace case on hand. I want to be ready for small-time things and big-time things. It's part of my emergency kit right next to, you know, the flashlights and the food and the backup stash of peanut butter that I'm not sharing with you. I'm sorry. Some things just, we don't have that sort of relationship, just so you know. The Jace case gives us 5 full courses of life-saving antibiotics. Each one of them has that. And these are real prescription meds. They're ready to go whenever you need them. It's personalized for your needs and even includes ivermectin if you want that option. In a world where the next disaster is always around the corner, you can't forget to be prepared. And you got to take control of your health before an emergency, not during the emergency. That's not a good time to do it, as we found out when we were trying to buy toilet paper. Head to Jace.com right now. You can grab your Jace case or enter to give their big giveaway they have going on. You can use the promo code STU for a discount. It's Jace.com, J-A-S-E.com. The promo code is STU. Jace.com, the promo code is STU. Check it out now, Jace.com.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
I'm joined once again by Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, thanks for coming on the program, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you about this because you are fired up about the Signal story. And I did something on this yesterday. And my basic take was, I'm sure you tuned in every episode, but if you happen to miss it, was basically like, we don't know the story yet. We don't know really what's true. But also, if this is a mistake, it's a pretty bad mistake. It shouldn't happen. We should be okay calling out our own side when they make a mistake. That's okay. On the other hand, we don't know what the whole story is here. And you have a kind of a theory. I want to go into what we learned today before we get into it, or at least what we think we learned today. The Atlantic has now released the entire Signal chat. And part of what makes me skeptical of the Trump administration's general response to this is like all the games of semantics they're playing, which is like they were like, there were no war plans in this chat. Now, we now have the chat. I mean, I don't know. Would you call it a war plan? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have everything that you'd need in a war plan. It is not a congressionally authorized war. However, it is pretty detailed in the fact of like the bombs will drop at this exact minute, right? It is like that detailed. Obviously, stuff that the average person shouldn't know. They also say it's not classified. Are they just playing a semantic game here? Because obviously it's very sensitive information at the very least.
So they clearly held back classified information within that message, mm-hmm. or Hegseth did. He talks vaguely about target packages.
Yes.
So target packages would be the heavily classified stuff. A target package is, that's general nomenclature for military strikes. It includes the person you're going after, the types of ordnance, like the location, you know, coordinates, all that stuff, imagery, a bunch of other stuff. So they very specifically left out the higher classified stuff from that text.
Right.
So.
He didn't say the name of the person they were going after, right? They said the top missile guy. Mm-hmm. That was after the attack. They did say, kind of refer to the person, what time that person would be attacked, which it does seem like they actually got him, which is a good news.
And they also held out something that Goldberg looks apparently like he completely lied about. He said
that
he said that director, CIA director Ratcliffe had named like a classified source within like a CIA source. I don't know if it was in Yemen or wherever, but that person that Ratcliffe named was his chief of staff. Not a classified source.
No.
So that is a blatant lie by Goldberg or a mistake.
Right. I don't think highly of Goldberg at all. In fact, particularly like, you know, I go back to remembering him firing Kevin Williamson, which was one of the legitimately like most spineless things in the beginning bubblings of cancel culture, mm-hmm. where they went back and found an old point he had made on abortion, and like after they had hired him, canceled him. So like I have no respect for Goldberg at all. You know, that being said, I think his terminology saying, okay, well, war plan, like he should not have been on this chat. It is a mistake he's on there. The White House has admitted it is bad that he's on there. The question is, how did he get on there, right? And this is where your theory comes in. Walk us through what you think might have happened here.
So can I give some behind the scenes?
Yes, of course. Please.
So when I heard you do your monologue,
yeah.
I was actually over there. You can't see right now, but that's the Oval Office set.
Yes.
And we were doing chalkboards.
I saw
that.
You lurking over there.
So I was in the middle of all the crap that we found out about the CIA infiltrating media, private companies, everything. And I heard out of my right ear, you give that monologue. Yeah. And then production staff were holding me back because I was about to charge on and go, I got a theory.
You're like, yeah, at what point you come over, you're like, can I come on and just give you this theory? And I was like, we have a minute and a half left in the show. I don't think that's going to work.
And your producer's like, just nailing me. Shut up.
So give me, we have more than a minute and a half now. Give me kind of like what you're thinking here.
Okay.
Because I mean, you were in CIA mode, to be fair. You're in like, holy crap, the CIA is involved in everything mode. That's kind of the context of you going to the story, but like it's applicable context.
Yeah. And very specifically, the things that I was thinking about was, you know, in the JFK files, which you'll find out about tonight on our special.
Yeah, this is a must watch tonight, by the way.
Oh, it's insane.
BlazeTV.com/Stu, promo code is Stu. You're going to get a fuller version of the show on BlazeTV, right? Like you can get some of it on YouTube, get some of it on Pluto TV. Of course, that would be great if you watch that. But join BlazeTV. You get the full thing tonight.
Including in a reenactment at a ranch in Oklahoma of Oswald shots.
Yes.
Nuts.
And it's Glenn doing it.
It's Glenn doing it. But in those files, some of the things we uncovered was not exactly like a smoking gun of, you know, like who was actually the person that shot, whether it's Oswald or somebody else.
Right, right.
But it was all the crazy crap the CIA has been involved in, going back to the early 60s. One of those, which we pulled the document, was how they infiltrated U.S. media, specific journalists, and they talk about not only the journalists that they infiltrated. Let's just say their last name could be like, I don't know, Goldberg or something like that. That's just a random name pulled out of the hat.
Sure, of course.
But if there was a Goldberg back in the 60s, so I'm just going to sign that name.
Sure.
They infiltrated this person and not only him, but all of their contacts. So, and that included a contact like Attorney General RFK, which they note in the CIA document. All these people were considered now, you know, penetrable assets that they now had. U.S. citizens and media. Also U.S. companies. Let's just say if there was a company back in the day called Signal, you know, but it was Pan Am.
Right,
but let's just say there was a Signal back in the day. Yeah. They had infiltrated it and they were bragging about it in these documents. Now that's the stuff I was thinking about. Now I see this whole thing with Signal nowadays, including this conversation, which is very weird to me. For one, I don't know if you saw Mike Waltz responded. It was either yesterday or today. And he was talking about how this contact got added in.
Yeah.
There were rumors for a while that possibly a staffer of his accidentally did
that. That was definitely leaked, it seems like, from the White House, at least initially. And to be fair to anyone who's skeptical of this theory, and somewhat including me, it is... The White House has done a bunch of different excuses. Like they've come up with about six or seven different things. Some of them don't work together. they've been updating their response to this. First, it was no one texted anything about war plans. Then it was, well, you know, it wasn't classified. Then it was, well, it was a mistake. He's a good guy. Like, they've come up with about five or six different things they said. So I can understand the skepticism of whatever they're saying now, because they did say seemingly the staffer thing. Now Walz is saying it's not the staffer.
He
just
said,
knew.
Direct quote. Yeah, knew. He's saying it was not a staffer. The way he describes it, I don't have the direct quote. But he said
he tweeted it, by the way, if you want to see the quote, Jason Buttrell on Twitter.
Yeah. He said something about, he said that it was a different number assigned to a different contact.
Right. So if you think about this, this is like we're on a group chat in which we're discussing whatever stupid thing the Cowboys just did. And I tweet, hey, can you believe they picked up this bum? And it says Jason Buttrell on my screen. When I click on the screen on the info, if I were to happen to do that, it's actually somebody else's number. Who's
Jerry Jones's number.
It's Jerry Jones's number, and Jerry Jones is very pissed.
Yes.
He can't believe I would say such a thing about him.
Yes.
That's kind of what he seems to be describing here. We don't know for sure, but that's what he seems to be describing.
Right, and that is very interesting to me. He also goes on to say, I don't know how this happened. We're trying to figure it out, whether it was just a mix-up or mess-up,
yeah,
or some other technological mean. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And it's not like when, you know, a new administration comes in that the CIA actually installs signal on some of these devices. Wait, Stu, that's what Ratcliffe testified yesterday.
That the CIA is actually putting it on the devices?
He said day one, when he was confirmed, the CIA came in, which he's the director of, and installed it onto his computer. I just find that interesting because, like, why is the CIA have such a personal, close relationship with Signal? And why do they trust it wholeheartedly?
Mm.
Well, Stu, mm-hmm, it happens to be that there is a direct connection through funding. Back in the day when Signal was first being developed, they got funding from, and I'm forgetting the name of the organization now, but I'm going to have Glenn talk about this tomorrow, from an organization that... is a government organization. They gave millions into the development of Signal, which I find highly suspicious because we know the government, if you believe anything from the Snowden files or anything, or just if you believe common sense, we know that the government wants to be able to peek into what we talk about.
Of course.
Whether they want to use FISA to get through it or whatever, they want to be able to peek into it. So why would they be funding an organization that claims to have unbreakable device-to-device encryption?
And they still claim that, by the way.
They still claim that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of weird to me. So we looked further into that, and the direct funding has ties to organizations like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, which have documented direct ties to CIA funding and CIA operations during the Cold War. So there is a CIA connection, if you follow the funding back through the years, directly to this funding that goes towards Signal. I find that interesting. That's at least weird. It gets even weirder when you find out reports of, like, back in when WikiLeaks was releasing tons and tons of information. They released something called Vault 7, where it was documents that showed that the CIA had capability to penetrate both Signal and WhatsApp.
Mm.
So they're saying that they have this secretly, but now they're saying, no, it's okay. And it's completely safe for even the CIA director to now use Signal. Okay, well, is there any more evidence? Well, Tucker Carlson said that the NSA peered into his Signal and then was able to pick out messages and read back to him, basically, oh, we know you're going to do this interview with Vladimir Putin, something he had not told anybody except through on Signal. So to me, it paints a picture of the CIA has some kind of backdoor into Signal. It's what it looks like to me.
Mm.
Now, if you're talking about, quote, other technical means for explaining how the wrong number on a different contact suddenly got inserted by, I don't know. You talk to Goldberg, like, I have no idea. I just added. You know, like, well, how? Because no one seems to know if you believe the government narrative, which, again, that could be iffy as well.
Yes, certainly.
But it kind of seems like to me, I'll just say it, this entire thing was a CIA op.
There we go. We got to it. So answer me this. Is this I'm thinking of here as you're going through this theory. What would be the purpose of this? Like, why would they want a journalist to come in and report, okay, they had an attack a couple weeks ago that
Excellent
everyone
question.
Supports?
Excellent question.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, again, our findings on the JFK docs. It was just... There's no other way to take it or to look at this. There was an absolute war between the JFK administration and the Central Intelligence Agency, the entire intelligence community at large. After the Bay of Pigs, Kennedy did not trust the CIA. He fired Allen Dulles. Mm-hmm. He got rid of the former USAID, which is what's called the International Cooperation Administration. He got rid of that because they were funding all of these CIA paramilitary ops all over the world in soft power. They turned that into a new organization, which has no ties at all to the CIA today, called USAID. Oh, actually, yeah, they do, actually. Mm-hmm. These things never change, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They just move on and they infiltrate. Now, I look at timelines now. The Select Subcommittee on Intelligence with Tulsi Gabbard was scheduled for yesterday. They were all talking about it. Well, I just find it interesting that this story drops the day before the Select Subcommittee.
So they all could get asked about it in real time.
It dominated everything.
Sure.
And then once the news cycle starts to have the appearance of moving on in this chaotic world of everything happening all at once, they drop another story with the full. Before they said, oh, this is sensitive information, we're not going to talk about it in our original publication. Well, today they said, screw it. I guess it's not that sensitive. And they've released the full messages now today.
Yeah.
So now they're injecting it back into it. Now, if you're the intelligence community, and you feel personally attacked by the Trump administration, you feel like, oh, he's screwing everything up we were doing in Ukraine. He's screwing everything up with USAID, like Kennedy did with the ICA.
Yeah.
He's screwing everything up that we're doing. There is a war right now between the Trump administration and the intelligence community. And if you believe Chuck Schumer, he said there's a million ways to Sunday how the intelligence community can make your life a living hell if you do.
I think he's right on that, but I do not believe Chuck Schumer, I will say.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we can agree on that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this was done deliberately. I think it was a CIA op. I think it was done deliberately to dominate the conversation between Trump's cabinet members to get them turned against each other. And I believe it was also done to derail anything else that they have going forward and to publicly embarrass.
Yeah, sending a message at the very least. Last one here. We're a little late, so we have to keep this kind of short. But, like, is there – I think there is – I have this weakness maybe a little bit. There's this idea that, like, all these things we know about in history that were shady, CIA doing all sorts of crazy stuff. We have this, like, bias, I think, toward the current time that those things are old and those things don't happen anymore. We solved them. We knew about them then, and now we're kind of solved. Is that a problem that we all kind of have looking back? And do we get too comfortable thinking those crazy things only happened in the olden days?
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about surveilling a presidential campaign in the 1960s and Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
Like, that could never happen today, right?
right, never.
Oh my gosh, that happened in 2016 in Trump?
Yeah.
That's the reason, in my opinion, why the CIA fought tooth and nail every single time it came for a release of the JFK files. They said, no. At the last minute, they would write a letter.
Yeah.
And say, there's methods and stuff that we cannot talk about. Really? From the 1960s? What methods are you compromising today? Well, you're not redacting methods. You're redacting pattern of behavior. And if we don't get full disclosure, that's why this matters. Mm. If you don't get full disclosure, the scenarios you talked about will continue to happen. They'll continue to run crazy, surveilling, presidential campaigns, infiltrating U.S. media and companies. It'll keep happening. We got to continue to ask these questions so it doesn't happen again.
Well, that is a great promo for tonight's program.
Oh.
You do not want to miss it. It is on Blaze TV, of course, the Glenn Beck program. Again, you can get it on YouTube. You can get it on Pluto TV. But there, because of the length of everything, you're not going to get the entire package. You got to go to Blaze TV to get that. So blazetv.com/Stu. Promo code is Stu. It'll save you some cash. But the bottom line is this is one you want to watch the entire length of because there's a lot in there. And Jason, I think, just outlined really well why this matters, right? Like, why does it matter 60 years later with all these documents? It's still really important. Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck, theory maker extraordinaire. This is great stuff. Jason, thanks for coming on, man.
It was a CIA op.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
So I'll have a quick sip here from my mug.
The mug happens to say, Andrew Cuomo is awful. .com. I don't actually have any liquid in it. Andrew Cuomo is awful. He's terrible. He's a horrible human being, which of course means he will rise throughout the Democratic Party ranks and get promoted. That is, and it's weird because he used to be governor. You might say, is mayor promoting? Is that a promotion? It's New York City. I mean, honestly, you know, no knock on Albany, but like Albany is like not necessarily in the center of everyone's thought outside of New York. New York City kind of is. And running that city is a very high profile position. And by the way, barring something crazy, Andrew Cuomo is going to be mayor of New York City. Here's the latest poll that kind of gives you that point. Andrew Cuomo at 41% in the Democratic primary, which, of course, is really the only contest in that particular city. There's 18% support some assemblyman that I don't even know, 8% some comptroller that I know even less about, and then 6% Mayor Eric Adams. The current mayor is at 6%. He's losing 41-6 to Cuomo. Now, the only possible... I shouldn't say the only possible way, because there could be 25 new allegations against Andrew Cuomo before this thing is, and he could shake apart from scandal. So that possibility exists. If that does not occur, the only way that Cuomo would even have a chance of losing would be something like Eric Adams dropping out of the Democratic Party, going independent, and then getting all the Republican votes plus some Democrats. Maybe he could challenge Cuomo. But that would be in a situation where it was a general, which I don't think he could win in New York City. So, I mean, I think Cuomo's like 90% chance of winning that election right now. So get used to it. Get used to me talking about AndrewCuomoIsAwful.com a lot and selling a lot of freaking mugs. I got to put my kids through college. OK, I'm going to do it on the back of these freaking mugs right here. AndrewCuomoIsAwful.com. All right, let me give you a couple of other crazy Democrats before we leave. Maxine Waters is at it again. She is completely insane and one of my favorite Democrats for it. Here she is blabbing about Melania Trump.
We don't care how much money you have, Elon.
That's right.
We don't give a damn about Doge.
No.
She's just crazy.
We are going to defend the Constitution because we believe in democracy.
Hey, get your head out of the shot.
So many people have sacrificed and fought and died for democracy. And Trump comes along with his ignorant and he don't even know the Constitution. If he wants to start looking so closely to find those who were born here and their parents were undocumented, maybe I ought to first look at Melania.
Melania, I don't think that's going to be something that's going to happen. It's shocking how much they want to deport their enemies, though. That's, of course, and they get mad at Donald Trump for having an enemies list. She's great. She's priceless, as I said. And when I say priceless, I mean worth zero. So that's kind of what I mean there. And then, of course, I got to say, Maxine's kind of my old flame here, even crazier and even more new shiny thing for me is Jasmine Crockett. I freaking love her. She's my favorite Democrat in the world right now. And here she is blabbing about something else that got her in trouble.
Because we in these hot ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now.
Oh, that's funny. See, it's funny because he's in a wheelchair.
The only thing hot about him is that he is a hot ass mess.
Ah, I get it. Get the sass. Do you guys get the sass from Jasmine Crockett? What I love about this is every video before she's gotten to the public eye, she just sounds like, an accounting student. Like, she doesn't sound like this at all. I don't know what part of it's manufactured, but some part of it is. You gotta love there's no other part to the joke other than that man's in a wheelchair. That's the whole joke. And everyone in the crowd is cracking up at it. A hilarity ensues when you make fun of people in wheelchairs, apparently. So thank you for existing, Jasmine Crockett. I mean, AOC, you're old news to me. You're no longer my favorite Democrat. Jasmine's the new thing, and I'm here for it. Okay, so here's what happened. I want to give you an update on our hot mugshot girl. Do you remember her from a couple weeks ago? An arresting smile. Georgia sorority girl Lily Stewart's hot mugshot charms the internet. She's innocent. And, you know, she was speeding and she got caught again for speeding right after that, got arrested. She went to get the mugshot done and she looked very, very nice. Look at that beautiful mugshot. The problem is, apparently, we now have another mugshot. You don't want to have two mugshots this close together. College student who recently went viral for her smiling mugshot arrested again only weeks later. This time, it was arrested on obstruction of law enforcement and loitering and prowling. This is what her new mugshot looks like. And again, she looks very, very pretty. I will say, I'm a little concerned. There's maybe a little bit of a case of crazy eyes setting in. And I, you know, maybe if you get arrested twice in a row, that just naturally happens. I will say, we do the research here on this program, okay? We work hard for you. And that's why we use artificial intelligence to project what her next mugshot will look like if she continues with the crazy eyes. And wow, that's looks a little bit like AOC there. Just a little bit. The crazy eyes are coming.